All right. Well, we're back to Job. You had your 2 week respite from me here. So we're going to jump back in, and I'm going to remind you a little bit, just a little bit, of what we talked about when we did first two installments of looking at Job. You know, trouble is endemic to being human. If you're alive, you're going to have trouble. Even Jesus had trouble. Okay? Nobody's immune to trouble. We do have different kinds of trouble. We have trouble that we bring upon ourselves. We have trouble that comes from the world just being fallen. We have trouble because things happen that we cannot control. But it's all something that we have to wrestle with and that we can't get around it. But whenever we looked at Job chapter 1, we talked about a few things. One, we looked at some truths, and we also looked at some things that weren't true. Whenever people look at and try to wrestle with this idea of the fact that we have trouble. Some of the things we talked about were, you know, that there are elements in Christendom in this country, it probably exists in other countries too, where there is people who sort of twist our arm behind our back and say, if you were a Christian, you wouldn't have this going on in your life. Okay? Or they would say, you know, Christians don't have trouble. There are those that do preach that. Okay? Christians don't have trouble. Christians don't do this. Christians don't have these issues. Well, the problem is it always breaks down at some point, some way, somehow. Yeah. I'm not laughing at this, but as an example, I was reading a little bit in the Atlanta paper. There's been a couple of big high-profile pastors in the last couple of years who had huge churches. Everything looked like it was all great and fine and terrific, but then there's all these other undercurrents of stories that come out about the churches. And it just so happens that one of those pastors was one of those pastors that did the, if you just do this, then you got God's arm twisted behind his back and he has to do this for you. When you look at the book of Job, you find out that there are people who were great people that God loved and respected, and they still had trouble. In fact, if we look at the storyline, it looks like the heavenly part of, or the dimension of the story, helps us see why and understand some of why we have trouble. And very little of that has to do with us. But then but not to say that there's never anything that we don't invite upon ourselves. Because we do, because we're fallen, because we're broken. So we get trouble from that too. So we've looked at that first part of the story where we saw that the heavenly thing going on with the angels gathering, coming before God, and God seeing Job. And we're going to see that kind of replicated to some degree as we look at and begin chapter 2. And we get to find something of Job's second wave of trouble, because he had his first wave. Remember what happened in the first wave of trouble? He lost all his stuff. Then he lost his family. And in this one, we're going to see there's another wave. We go back to the heavenly dimension to see what's happening behind, you know, like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, what's behind the curtain. You know, he's whipping it up. We're going to find out. How all that happens and what's going on there. So John, all right, Job chapter 2. So chapter 1. On another day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them to present himself before him. And the Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? Now you'll notice that so far this sounds just like chapter 1. And Satan answered the Lord, from roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Again, this is the second time he has said the same thing to Satan. There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright. This is God singing the praises of Job, a man who fears God and shuns evil, and he still maintains his integrity. In other words, this first wave of stuff you've put him through because you asked me to sift him, he still holds to his integrity. God's saying, ha, though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason. All right. So we have this reintroduction of what's going on in the heavenlies. And again, we have God dealing with Satan. So the first fallacy that we see a lot of times when we come to this is we see, and you know what fallacy means? It ain't true. Satan has authority beyond the earth and equal to God on earth. That is not correct. Trouble gets in front of us, and many times we can't see past the trouble. And whenever we don't see past the trouble, what we're doing is that very thing. When we don't look past the veil to realize there's a bigger picture, and we act like that trouble is supreme, we are falling into this fallacy. Explain to me how that is. Why is that? We let the big T keep us from seeing the big picture. How do we fall into that fallacy? A little louder, Ms. Jerry. Okay. We're believing Satan's lies, but what's the problem with that big that trouble? What's that trouble done? Okay. Truth being, you'll notice as this second installment of the heavenly court, or whatever you want to call it, happens, you'll notice that it says Satan came in to present himself to God. Now, for somebody who wants to act like he is God, it sounds a whole lot more like he is a chihuahua on a line than that he is in charge. That make sense to you? He is presenting himself to God. He has no authority in the heavenly places at all. None. He is on a leash. And the only thing he can do is what God lets him do. And he can't do it there. He can only do it here. Where has he been? Where does he have authority for the time? There you go. That's why he's here. So truth is, Satan has no authority in the heavenly realms, and he is isolated just to here. Until when? You and I know this. When does his authority end? When it's completed. Jesus is back. It's done. He is going to go where?
Lake of fire.
Thank you, Brian. The lake of fire. He and all the demons. It's done. In the meantime, he is doing what John 10:10 talks about. He is here to maim, kill, and destroy anything he can, anything he can do to cause any trouble in God's purpose and plan. That's what he wants to do. That's why he's roaming the earth. So you see how Job's story fits in. It's kind of like Satan saying, if I can turn the guy who is the number one draft pick on God's team, it would be a big coup. If I can just get him to join the Lakers instead of the Cavaliers, it would be a big deal. So what he's trying to do is put trouble in front of Job to keep Job from remembering the big picture and only seeing the T, the trouble. And it's not one-dimensional. That's the one thing we need to get from this, is that trouble is not one-dimensional in life. Because this is a full court press by somebody who wants to maim, kill, and destroy. And it's designed to overwhelm us. And it doesn't come to the people who are godless. It comes to the people who are of God. Just the same. In fact, strategically, more aimed. So why is Satan roaming the earth? We just talked about that. And then truth two, God believes in people like Job, which is a rather interesting way of seeing that. You see how he says that? Have you seen Job? He's my boy. His picture's on my refrigerator. I'm proud of him. You've been out there running back and forth on the earth. And no matter what trouble you have been able to unleash, he has stayed strong. He has borne the family resemblance well. Carried the name. Is it possible for us to be like this before God? How can we get to where we know God says, see, there's Tim. His picture's on my refrigerator. Can I rephrase that just a tiny bit? I think the reality is that Job responded to the revelation he had received from God. Job didn't have, we have no excuse, because we've got explanations that Job never had. That comes to live within us if we will invite him. And the issue is that it's not that Job was able to be righteous without Jesus, it's that Job responded to what God gave him, and that made him righteous, just like Abraham. Abraham responded to God in terms of what God had revealed to him, and that made him righteous. So when we respond to God with what we know, the revelation He's given to us, we know that we get the full package. We know of Jesus. So we respond to Jesus, and that's what makes us one of the team. I do think that is part of understanding a bigger picture, seeing that there is a bigger picture. Our trouble, a lot of times, especially whenever the enemy comes and throws us many different curveballs, throw a slider, throw a curveball, throw change up, and we're still trying to adjust the best we can. Okay, we're struggling with all that, and it's overwhelming, A lot of times, then we magnify that, and our lens gets warped, and we see the trouble, not the context. Right? And we all, if we've had decent teaching in life that comes, from knowing about Christ and knowing the resources that are available to us as children of God, we ought to see the big picture. And what I think happens, at least from what I would say in my life, I understand the big picture better the more I've matured in the faith. And that means the more I've had to struggle through the trouble. And I've learned that I can trust God through the trouble or in spite of the trouble. It's sometimes, it's either one. Okay, but a lot of times, if my faith hasn't been matured or grown yet, it's very easy for the big T trouble to be the thing that I let keep me from paying attention to the big picture. Does that make sense? And I think all of our struggles are that there are times where we let the trouble keep us from seeing what's really happening. And as we mature and grow, we gain the ability to see the big picture more. But we're still human, and when we're weak or when we're tired, the T can keep us from seeing the big picture. And that's why we need each other. Which, interestingly, leads us kind of to where the direction of this chapter sort of goes. Okay? John, next part of this passage. So, Satan replied to God, "Skin for skin, a man will give all he has for his own life, but now stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face." Now, you have to understand, at this point, Job himself has not been physically touched. He's had external trouble. All his stuff's gone. His kids are gone. Which would be overwhelming in itself. But now, it's going to the next degree, and Satan's saying, okay, touch him physically. He'll let the big T keep him from seeing the big picture. You watch, God. And so, the Lord said to Satan, okay, then he's in your hands, but you got to spare his life. And you can't kill him. I'm not going to let you do that. I'm not going to let you do that. You don't have that authority. I'm not going to give that to you. So what we see here is the truth, which is that Satan only seeks to kill, maim, and destroy. That's his thing. Okay, he's consistent here. Okay. Truth two, even Satan's earthly authority is derived and has been delegated. He has to go to God to let him do it. Now, there are a lot of people that want to get all warped out of shape about this. Okay? They want to say if God told Satan he could do it, means God did it because God's ultimately it. I don't want to do that tap dance. Okay? The reality is there is the enemy who wants to do these things. He is not God. He is not equal to God. He never will be. That was his issue. He fell because he wanted to act like he was. He wanted to act like he had authority, but he didn't. But because there was a fall, One of the things that's a part of that, in that fall, is the fact that these things have still got to be at play in the world until it's all wrapped up. He also knows Job. He knows Job's heart. He will not let the enemy go over a line that he knows Job can deal with whenever the big picture is remembered. Does this make sense? Yes. Now, while all these things seem rather extreme, I mean, these are overwhelming. God knows Job. Have you seen him on my refrigerator? And because he knows him that well, he knows Job, he knows who he is, he knows what he's able to do to keep Job. And he knows that Job is going to go through all this stuff that we're going to be seeing in the next couple of weeks. It's important that we remember that. So we get back to God does not do evil. Because there's people that want to twist this up. They want to talk about, well, God allowed it, therefore God does. No, God does not do evil. So why does God allow Satan to trouble Job? What do you think? Test him. Okay? To test Job is a good answer. What else? There's several dimensions to this, isn't there? And you could say, to some degree, God is proving to us even now through the narrative. Okay, let's go to the next part of this. So, Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, and he afflicted Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the crown of his head. Then Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it as he sat among the ashes. Have you ever been that miserable? I don't know that. I mean, I've never had sores, and I've never scraped my sores with a potsherd or, you know, a piece of glass or whatever, piece of pottery. I haven't done that. But growing up, I had hives a whole lot, and they were all over me, and I felt like Quasimodo. It took me until I was 38 to figure out me and caffeine don't work together very well. So when I stopped caffeine, I no longer got hives. But I went to the high hospital with hives several times because I couldn't get rid of them. It didn't matter how many elephant doses of stuff I took. I was miserable. After you've had hives for about 3 or 4 days, folks, it gets old. Now, that's just that, but and shingles are worse than hives. I mean, there's lots of stuff that is miserable. And it's easy for us, as if we're still kind of immature in the faith, even if we know what truth is, the T gets in the way. And we don't see past the T. Because we start saying to ourselves, if God had the power, he could take this away. If he was a gracious, loving God, he would just do what I want him to do. Well, what do you think? What do you think? You know, God knew Job's heart. Job could have done, and Job was tempted to do the same thing. Are you with me on this? Number one, we don't have unlimited resources, sons. Then we have responsibility and all that good stuff. So then, the one closest to Job that he has shared his life with, who has experienced the same loss that Job has, said to Job, "Are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die." "Well, thank you, honey. Hadn't thought about that." And he replied, "You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" And this is where our theology has to be. Is everything that the enemy can throw at us, whether it is external, internal, physical, political, whatever you can put label you can put on it, shall we accept good from God and not trouble? Why should we accept trouble? And I'm being honest with you, because I've had the kidney stone, and my son's had two in the last 2 years. He's been suffering over the last 2 weeks from July 5th to yesterday, essentially, still trying to get rid of. For me, whenever I had that pain, it was real hard for me to see past the T, because it hurts. And all you want when it hurts is for the pain to go away. And the big picture is hard. when the big T is in front of the big picture from experience. But again, the more mature I get, the more capable I am of dealing with that in context. Luke's done a better job with his stone this time. He was able to get on top of it. He knew what it was. He didn't have as much pain, and it wasn't as terrifying as it was the first time. I'm not saying he hadn't been miserable. He has. But he's grown from the first experience. That make sense? David. So there's a choice when we see the big T, whether we let it have its work or we don't let it have its work. Does that make sense? I think the reality that we do have to remember Job, whenever Job makes his comments, Job is a man, like you and me, trying to make sense of his trouble and his suffering, just like you and I would. And while he's trying to come to grips with it, he says, "Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" That doesn't mean that he necessarily has that lens is correct. It's a man trying to come to grips with his trouble. Yes. I understand. I do. I get it. Because you do. You want concrete stuff that you can put your hands on, that you can understand. And there's some things I think we are just not going to understand. We can try to we can allow this trouble to help us trust God better as we see Him being with us through it. But that doesn't mean we understand it all. Well, again, Job never saw the heavenly court. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. That's clear from the narrative. Well, I don't think he authors it. But I do think he allows it because of the fallen nature of the creation that we are in now. When we let that happen, yes. Because there are examples of people like Pharaoh, heart got hardened. It got harder and harder. Yes, allowed that to happen. The calloused. Yes, yes. Through the choices, it became more and more calloused. Mike, were you going to say something? I think it's both. Okay, yes. What I'm trying to say, it's an opportunity. Trouble can drive us to God. Trouble can drive us away from God. I'm going to give you maybe a third option. Sometimes trouble makes us angry at God. And it may be one of those where it doesn't necessarily drive us away from God, but it makes us angry with Him. And sometimes people they live stupidly when they're angry at God. But the funny thing is, they're still angry at God. It isn't like there's not a God, I'm just mad at Him because my plan didn't line up with His plan, or His plan didn't line up with my plan. And so I'm angry with Him because I don't understand and I don't want to understand, or whatever the thing might be. So that's not necessarily running away from God and saying there is no God. That's saying I'm mad because I either don't understand, I'm mad because I'm not mature enough yet to see past the T to the big picture. Essentially because things they didn't have any control over, they felt like shaped their life in a negative way. And so who do you attribute that to? It's God. God put me in this situation. He gave me this set of circumstances, and He's responsible. Again, it's a matter of where we are in our spiritual maturity, and obviously people who haven't got a relationship with God haven't had that opportunity to let these things have some kind of purposeful outcome in their lives. Because we go back to Romans 8:28. All things work together for good to those who say there's purpose. Okay, there's purpose. And the issue is, I think, for us, that Job's story brings up for us is seeing trouble in a different way. And seeing that there's a big picture behind the trouble, and that we have to see more than just the trouble magnified in order to get it. And the rest of the story, as we plod, trod through this thing, is seeing the things that Job had to wrestle with and sort through to see and hold on to the big picture. And there's a lot of good things there, a lot of bad things there that we're going to look at. And it's, and I think you're right in your perspective, is that sometimes the reason why he's not working there is because I haven't invited him to yet. I get it. I've been there. The thing, the testimony is that in all this, Job did not sin. So at this point, Job has not cursed God and died. He has not let the big T keep him from holding to his faith and his integrity, trusting somehow. And again, we don't know what more than what the narrative tells us, but it seems to reflect that he was trusting God, although he was like us trying to wrestle through it. We'll pick up. I really don't have any more time. John, go to the questions, the next thing there. So we talked about, you know, these kinds of things, and we'll just go through the questions quickly. So why did Job's wife say such a harsh thing to him? Because she wasn't at the same place, so that whenever she encountered the same trouble, she was at a different place than Job. Why do people, friends and other believers, say things like this to others when inexplicable troubles come along? Why do you have some friends that say, oh, just go spit and jump off a cliff? You know, does Job's response ring true or not? And then how would you respond to someone who trusted, you know, you trusted, who said something like that to you? Now, the one thing that I want to go back to really quick is the idea of, if we're going to worship God, we do have to have a little bit of what we saw reflected in Job, and that is, are we not going to worship God whether we got trouble or not? Just because I got trouble today doesn't mean that I should. Because if that's the case, then we're going to be on again, off again, like, you know, like little light bulb flickering on a Christmas tree, you know? Because we're going to say, anytime we got trouble, it means God ain't doing his job. And then we're going to say, the light's on, everything's good. Now, the sad thing is, don't you know a lot of people that live that way? So we're going to worship God whether we got trouble or whether we feel like we're going down the water slide. Either way, we're having a great day, it's a lot of fun, or we got trouble. We're going to say God is on his throne, and it doesn't change that. That's the big picture. Father, I want to thank you because you are in charge and there is a big picture and your plan is being worked out. And Lord, sometimes that means that I am going to have trouble. Lord, help us to remember that you are with us and that we can hold to our integrity and we can grow when we have the opportunities that trouble brings. Lord, we're not saying we want trouble. Thank you that we don't have to ask you for trouble. Father, we do pray for your sustaining us and your abiding presence with us. Lord, use this in our lives to draw us closer to you, to trust you, and have faith that you are working. And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so we'll get on with the next couple of verses in chapter 2 next week.